est à côté de moi.
Elle peut m'entendre?
Oui, oui, oui. Elle t'entend très bien.
Je me demandais si Avri peut m'entendre.
Oui, oui, oui. You can hear everything? Yes, on est un peu lente parce que les gens mangent le petit déjeuner. Malheureusement, c'est très petit ce matin. Il y a juste un peu de fruits. Et des très, très, très petits pains.
Hi, Glenn, this is Tim. At what time are we likely to commence the transcription, please?
Tim, we still... Okay, I've had the sign. Please start the recording. Thanks, Tim.
One second, please. I'll let... One second. Please go ahead, the call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Tim. Shall I do a roll call for you, Marika? In the room here today, we have Avery Doria, Tatiana Kramsovska. I think each one is going to say their own name.
This is Jeff Newman.
Samantha Eisner.
Marika Konings.
James Wydell.
Paul Diaz.
Alan Greenberg.
Marilyn Cade.
John Berard.
Is there anybody on the line except for Rafik? And we've got Rafik on the line. Rafik Damak.
Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff Newman. I'm the chair of the Policy Development Process Work Team. We are here in Cartagena, Colombia, during the ICANN meeting. And this is actually a working session, so unlike some of the other sessions before, we're not doing a status report as to where we are. We are actually continuing our work. With that said, one of the first things I want to cover, Marika has been nice enough to do some slides for us if we are able to schedule time with our own constituencies or stakeholder groups. I know the registries will spend a few minutes talking about it, and I'm hoping that the other stakeholder groups / constituencies here have some time on their agenda to possibly present these slides. This is a very dense amount of material, a lot of material, and a lot of important material that's going to affect our work for, and our work being the GNSO community's work for years to come. And I think certainly when the council did a prioritization exercise, this showed up as one of the highest priorities. And so even though there's some motions now that are pending about trying to speed up the work or put in a another standing committee, We'll work that out at the council level, but even those councilors that are proposing those motions still feel that this is a important piece of work that we need to make progress on and hopefully finalize in the next several months. With that said, I don't know if we just want to go start. Marika, do you have control of the slides? Or okay, so I don't want to, like, discuss all the materials. I kind of just want to flip through these slides quickly to give you kind of an idea of what's in them to present. So I'll just wait for...
Do you want me to project them as well?
Sure. I don't know how far that goes. So the two parts, just while Marika's setting up, we're going to go through the slides, and then we're going to go back through our outstanding issues document. Just to remind some people maybe who haven't been here in a while, the outstanding issues document, we had a public comment period after our initial report. There were a number of substantive really good comments that we got that had a lot of material. We went through those public comments. We responded to those public comments, or at least, you know, talked about our responses to those comments. And then there were some issues that were we kind of pushed off and said, look, these are some big outstanding issues. Let's deal with them later. And now we're in the process of dealing with them later. And the goal of all of this is to put out our draft final report out for comment. The reason it's a draft final report as opposed to a final one, which you've seen in other groups, they would do an initial report, comments, and then a final report. This is a draft final report being put out to comment because of the fact that there was a lot of substance that was in the comments and a lot that we've added since. And we feel like we still will need public comment on a bunch of aspects. And we'll talk about those through the slides. So obviously the first slide is just an overview. I think you all know this. We can just flip to the next one. Approach is pretty self-explanatory. Okay, and then, you know, just a reminder of how we got here and how we did the initial report. We divided into five stages. Again, we can just kind of go really quickly through these. Kind of a general background on what our recommendations covered. Some are really to codify existing practices. Some were to recommend new approaches. Marilyn.
Jeff, I was thinking about this new practice. I think it's a new practice where we have now a PDP procedures manual. While the counselors, I think, are very familiar with this new approach that is being instituted of I'm thinking, is that something that you think most of the members are? Those are documents that members don't always even see. So I'm not saying this is not an excellent idea. I'm just noting that like the work coming out of the OSC, for instance, generating the administrative procedures manual or whatever, I'm not sure that those documents are actually documents that constituencies regularly see. So the reason I flagged that is maybe just a comment for staff that one other thing that ought to be easily accessible on the GNSO website probably just ought to be those kinds of documents.
This is Marika. I think the idea is they will become part of the GNSO operating rules, but as a chapter standing on itself. So the idea would be that whenever a working group is formed, that specific document would, the first thing that would be sent to all the members of the group so that they can read and need to see what the process is, what the requirements are, what the different steps are. And I think, what we would like to do as well, once the new process is in place, that at the start of every working group, staff can provide a presentation or, we record that so people can listen to that at their own time to take them through the new process. And I think that the idea would be as well at that stage, once it's adopted, to do that probably as well at an ICANN meeting or to the different constituencies to make sure that everyone's up to speed and knows what is in this new process.
Right, and this is in later slide, but when you're explaining it to your stakeholder groups or constituencies, the important part that we all discussed very early on was that there's a lot of detail in this whole policy development process, and they all can't be in the bylaws, and to take those areas that we all believe there should be more flexibility on, to put those into the manual, and then to take those that we really feel strongly that shouldn't be changed very easily. Even from a perception standpoint, because even changing the operating rules is not the easiest thing in the world, but certainly from a perception standpoint, changing the bylaws are a lot more difficult. And so really those areas that contracted parties, for example, have said are very important to them are tied down into the bylaws. Yes, Aubrey.
You've actually said that a couple times, that changing the bylaws is harder than changing the procedures. Changing the procedures takes GNSO going through a process, making a recommendation, it going to the board, it getting an external review, etc. Changing the bylaws requires the board having an idea to change a bylaw, putting out a review, and changing the bylaw. I'm not sure that changing the bylaw is actually harder than changing operating procedures. You may prefer it that way, but I think the argument that it's harder, it only requires one phase as opposed to two or three phases of work.
Yeah, I think, one of the things I just said, though, is this perception, right? So perception is reality. Yeah.
And that's why I was trying to comment on the perception being erroneous.
Fair enough. Yes, Samantha.
Just to clarify, from the bylaws changes amended in 2009 regarding the operating rules require a 21-day public comment period, but do not require board approval. That 21-day comment period allows for people to have some sort of quote-unquote appeal mechanism to allow their voices to be heard for the GNSO to consider when making the changes. But I'm not trying to say that the GNSO internal procedures are any less onerous, to me, with what Avery was saying. But they do not require board approval.
Thank you. Okay, and if we want to move on to the next slides. Okay, so here we have our list of some of the, what we pulled out as being kind of key recommendations. There's obviously a lot of recommendations we have in the initial report and then we've talked about since. These just cover some of them. Let's flip through these quick because the point is not really to go through all of these.
If I can just come, because basically they follow, like the previous one was the issues report, initiation to PDP. So if I try to take out the key ones relating to the different elements, and then especially those that either have changed or are new compared to current practice.
Right. So this is just, again, just for those that maybe just listening, this is just flipping through those different recommendations. And then the review about, what we talked about, reviewing an individual PDP versus reviewing the entire PDP process. And then this is an important one, which, is really the issues that we've been talking about in the last few weeks and we'll be talking about for the next few weeks, being optimistic. So here's the list of the outstanding issues, and it'd be great if you can get some feedback, because these are ones some of them are ones we're kind of struggling through, talking about a need for expedited procedures in case of a emergency PDP or something of that effect. Voting thresholds is something that we've kind of talked about. We've added one for raising an issue, but really have not strayed too far from where it's been, although, it's interesting because one of the things I hear constantly over dinner chatter is some people feel like raising an issue is too, even the way it exists now, is too low of a barrier. Others feel like it's too high. So it's something that people do still talk about considerably and, in fact, came up yesterday, I think, either yesterday or the day before, in council discussions about prioritization and the how that interacts with, it takes a fairly low number to raise an issue, but then can you use a prioritization exercise to put that down very low on the priority, which in essence is almost the same thing as voting it down. So if you only require a certain percentage of one house to approve raising an issue, then if you require a lower threshold to kind of, I'm not saying this very well. If it's a low threshold to raise an issue, but then it's fairly easy to put that on a very low priority, then you've kind of got this inherent conflict of, okay, yeah, the issue's raised, but we're going to just push it all the way to the bottom so it effectively never comes up. So that's being discussed a lot in the hallways, I've heard, and certainly in the council session. So it may be one of those issues you might want to flag for your individual groups. And then termination of a PDP, which is something that's really never been done. A PDP has only really terminated by almost fizzling out, as opposed to the council deciding, okay, you know what, we've had enough. It's not really, we just want to end it before there's some kind of concrete outcome. And Marilyn has got a comment on that.
I'm sorry, but as the queen of history of PDPs, We have terminated PDPs before, bringing them to a conclusion and recommending policy.
Yes, I was talking about prior to any recommendations coming out. So if a group is not functioning very well, or it's just, you know, the issue fizzles out for whatever reason. I mean, VI is a perfect example of one that was kind of taken over by external circumstances, and then the council was left kind of in a position of going, the working group itself discussed, well, you know, now that one of the real reasons we were doing this was talking about VI new TLDs, and the board pretty much has made a decision on that. What do we do with the group? And so that's kind of an issue that's really never been broached before.
But I would, it's Marilyn speaking again, I actually would just say, I think what we need to put into context there is, with the change in the council's role and function, during, and that has been actually not that long ago, right, roughly a year ago, I think, right? I think the problem is, Jeff, you're quite right, the council has not yet established what its procedure will be, both to evaluate the progress being made, to assess what the additional resources or support is that a working group needs, or and I think distinguishing between managing a process versus jumping in and doing it yourself. And sometimes counselors are still choosing to wear both hats, by necessity, perhaps. So I accept what you said, but I want to put it into context of, I think, where we are in the development cycle, of developing that process by which the council is going to have to be able to come back and say, now we're going to step back and we're going to neutrally assess work and progress as opposed to outcome.
Right, and I think the working group work team has some recommendations on the role of a council liaison to hopefully keep the council informed and to serve as that neutral liaison between the working group and the council. And so that's hopefully going to go to the council in a final report very, very soon. Marika?
Yeah, it is, Marika. I mean, I think we didn't discuss that outstanding item yet in detail, but something that, you know, the work team might look at is that it can only be terminated if it's also with the agreement of the working group. For example, that's not the council itself that can say, look, you know, we're going to shut it down, while the working group says, well, you know, we haven't finished our work and we're willing to complete it. But it might be a process where you say, well, if the working group comes with a recommendation saying, look, we don't think there's anything left to do, and or we're deadlocked, and we see that with, you know, because of outside circumstances, there's no role for us anymore, and that might be a process to consider.
Yes, Aubrey.
I agree completely, but wouldn't that be sort of, they would put out even a brief report that said that was the state and send that up for termination? So in a sense, that would be terminating one as one is always terminated, or?
Well, if you look at VI, for example, because normally the termination is that they fulfill their charter, they've delivered their initial report, they've done the final report, and I think with VI, they said, well, we haven't done anything in our charter. We haven't really done a final report, and we want to stop now. So it's basically that you don't have to go through all the motions. There have been instances where working groups indeed have produced reports saying, look, we don't have consensus. This is what we have. This is our final report. You know, here you go. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Right. And so this is obviously, because it's on the list of outstanding issues, is something we'll be talking about in the next few weeks as we kind of wrap up the draft final report. And I think... and then the one area that we really haven't talked much about is the transition of, okay, now that we've kind of developed all these new procedures, what do we do with the existing PDPs that are underway, and how do we kind of transition all of that to the new process? And it may be pretty easy. You know, it may just be, okay, let's just start anew, but it's something we really haven't talked about. And then, of course, here's the next steps. Sorry, Marilyn, you want to?
Yeah, just one question, though, Jeff. I do think this group ought to briefly talk about the discussion that counselors had about the counselors' view. And again, I would say counselors as managers as opposed to counselors as active participants or advocates for particular issue positions. But the topic was should the PDP rules include a sunset at the end of every year? Or what other process in terms of maybe it wasn't PDP, but was should issues be sort of like closed down at the end of every year? I will just say, for the record that actually I thought there was a bit of a misstatement about closing bills down in Congress if they haven't been enacted at the end of a year and having to reintroduce them. It's actually every 2 years, I believe, because Congress doesn't sit year by year. But I also would not think that the U.S. would be the only model should someone used to wish to look at a legislative body. And my final point would be I was under the impression ICANN was not a legislature, but a policymaking and standards coordination body. So I might think there were other places that should be examined as well.
America?
Yeah, and I think indeed if the Council is going ahead with you know, exploring that option, I think it might be worth pointing out as well that, of course, in the context of a PDP, such a system might be gamed. You delay it as long as you can because you know at the end of the 2 years the slate will be wiped clean. So if you know if it's in your interest not to make any changes or you know have any consensus policies on a certain issue, you just need to drag it out, which is not too difficult in PDP land these days. So I think that's something that would need to be taken into account if such a system would be come into place.
Right. So we'll discuss that. I don't want to cut off discussion on this topic. It's just that's one of our outstanding issues that we will tackle in detail. And so finishing up kind of this slide presentation that's available to present to your stakeholder group or constituency or advisory committee, these are the next steps of the work team, which are to finalize the draft final report, open the public comment period, open the public comment forum to review those comments, update accordingly, and then finally to submit a final report to the PPSC for consideration. There's a lot of talk in the council of whether there'll be a PPSC to submit the report to or whether it's directly to the council. I suggest us not worrying about that as a work team and just focusing on the work and getting that final report done and submitted to whoever that ends up being. Yes, Marika?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to talk at this meeting as well about timeline and deliverables.
Yeah, that was one of...
Because I just wanted to note, I guess... A target might be the San Francisco meeting, because I think if indeed we have a draft final report out, it's good to present that to the community and have an opportunity to explain to people what is in there and what they're expected to comment on or which elements they might want to pay special attention to. But I also want to note that actually to the number of meetings that are left, if you look from January, if we would meet on a weekly basis, to the San Francisco publication deadline is 8, which is relatively short. So if there is a desire to try to meet that deadline, I think we need to put together a work plan, and we might need to meet more often, or you know, commit to doing more work on the list, or say we're not going to meet that deadline, and we're just done when we're done.
Yes, let me go to Avery and then Marilyn. That's an important topic of talking about timeline and
so
how we get to the final.
I just wanted to understand the timeline. A timeline would be to submitting to the PPSC in San Francisco or to submitting. And the PPSC end game is what, at least a month? So it's at least 4 of those meetings would be PPC consideration time?
I think San Francisco would be the publication of the draft final report.
Okay,
that
and
doesn't
that's
go
the submission to the PPSC.
No, because I think we would still want to review the public comments before
okay,
submitting
thanks.
Them to
So
to
it's
PPSC.
Still a long time yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Sorry, I thought there was a... Was it Alan? Oh, Marilyn. Okay, sorry.
I think maybe my question was answered, which was the startled look on my face of how could it be January the 8th, but it's because of their working schedule as well.
No, it's 8 meetings. So the publication deadline for San Francisco would be 21st of February. So counting, if you would meet once a week from January, it would be 8 meetings if we would continue meeting once a week.
Right. So one of the things that I'd like to talk about is, and I know we did it once last quarter, I think it was, or somewhere around that, we had a longer meeting one of those weeks. And if that's needed, then I think that's something we should consider. But yeah, one of the things the council's asking us for is such a work plan to be delivered to them with definitive dates as to when we think, subject to externalities that we may not be able to control, what are the planned deliverable dates for things as best as we can determine. Marika?
Because I think, you know, in addition to the outstanding issues that we're going through, I think it's very important as well that everyone reviews the draft final report as is posted on the wiki, because there are other changes in there as well that have been made based on the discussions we've had, based on the review of the public comments, that I think, you know, if people can review that now and highlight which are the issues that they think are, you know, incomplete or not changed as we discussed, so we can add them to that list and we don't, you know, have to have various cycles of lists of issues that people don't, are not happy with. So it would be really helpful if people can review that and then share those on the list, and we can just add them to the list of outstanding issues, so that we, after we've gone through all the outstanding issues based on the issues we haven't discussed in detail, but also those that people identify based on the review of the draft initial report, then after that we might be in a good position to produce a draft final report that everyone then can still read through, but then it might just be, you know, edits, commas, you know, spelling mistakes that need to be corrected, instead of opening other substantial issues for discussion.
Okay. So again, there's a lot in here, and you know, one of the things the council's been talking about is some, I'll call them misunderstandings or whatever it was with the OSC, and maybe there were parts of those reports that people didn't realize were in there. You know, we do have some time before the draft final report is released for public comment. It would be great to just review some of these recommendations with your stakeholder group / constituency / advisory committee. So that nothing comes as a surprise. You know, obviously we can't count on everybody reading every single word of every single document, but really relying on you all as kind of the representatives of your groups to make sure that your stakeholder groups are well informed. Okay, is that the last slide, I think? Of course, here's everyone's names. This is kind of this is important too, because you see there's a lot more names up there than are actual people that show up. So to the extent you see any of these people, to the extent that you can convince them to come back or to rejoin us, that would be fantastic. Marilyn?
Marika, sorry to ask you for this, but I actually need some. I need a specific page copied for the BC member meeting, just this page. I need 25 copies, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay. Yes, Alan.
Just to note, there's at least one name there that's an alternate, Cheryl, in this particular case. There may be others in that situation.
Sure. But these are all the people, I guess, that would be on the mailing list. Is that how we got them?
Yeah, these are all that are subscribed to the mailings or identified as members. And I can double-check with Glenn, but I'm not aware of anyone that has actually said that they want to be removed or are no longer members, but I'll double-check that.
Okay, Avery?
Just making the reminder that being on the list and following and speaking up when you have an exception to what's been done is considered by many a perfectly valid way to participate in a group. And in fact, I think we even wrote that in the working group recommendations, that if you want to follow something, just A, to know what's going on, and B, to raise a flag every time there's something that is a problem for you or your whoever it is you're representing, that there's nothing invalid about that way of participating.
That's correct, and I just, you know, it'd be nice to see some sign of life from some of these, you know, to actually make sure that your assertion, no, I shouldn't say assertion, to make sure that what you're saying, that they actually are paying attention, because I'm not convinced at this point that some of them are being those passive participants, but again, that would be helpful to know. Yes, Marilyn?
I have a different question, and I'm not... In the old days of the internet, we used to call that lurking, but things have improved since then. But my question is different, and that is, who gets to vote? Because if people are there, I am there as an individual member. The BC has two official participants, and we'll decide about whether we're going to change that at this meeting.
Thank you.
But who gets to vote? So if you're, because I think I have no problem with observers to any group, but I think either in working groups or in PDP groups or whatever we're saying, I just would like to better understand the rules, because if I'm electing from my constituency, if I'm electing someone to represent us, then I have certain rights to expect participation and voting if individual members show up as observers on their own, which I'm not objecting to at all and think could be a good thing. I would not expect them to have voting rights on behalf of the constituency. They may be individual members and have a vote according to that, but if they're there as observers...
So let me just clarify. So there is no voting that goes on, right? It's a consensus call. And then it's, you know, when we get around to that consensus call, one of the important things for the chair to do, one of my important jobs is to understand what their perspective is and how they're responding to the consensus call, and then to, you know, make sure that and this is something the working group work team discussed in detail and is constantly being discussed in PDPs, and I know Alan wants to talk about this because he's certainly faced this issue a lot in the Pedner group, right? But, you know, obviously the chair has to make a determination based on, so if one group is flooded with one type of participant, you know, the chair needs to take that into consideration. And then obviously it's a discussion between in the BC for you all as to how they respond to the consensus call, whether they're acting in their individual capacity or acting in a capacity as representative of a constituency. But Alan, let me turn it over to you because you've had much more experience in this.
Well, I've had some experience, and I also have some views that are not necessarily driven by that experience. The working group model was passed down to us from on high and mandated, and we haven't had a choice. What you're identifying is one of the major problems. We're not supposed to vote. These days we tend to be taking straw polls, and then the chair, using whatever divine wisdom is provided to all chairs, of course, is supposed to try to figure out how that maps to consensus and partial consensus, depending on who the people are, what color their hair is, and we don't know what else. How tall they are is certain, always important in our in business issues. There is no good answer because I think the model, to be honest, is somewhat flawed. In our desire to get inclusivity and get everyone involved, we've ended up with a model which is very hard to make decisions if we cannot reach full or almost full consensus. And yeah. Well, but by the way, for whatever it's worth, we went through a discussion, not we, but there a discussion has been held in terms of working groups that where people objected, saying, how dare you tell me I cannot vote in a poll or participate in a poll just because I never participated in any of the teleconferences and you can't tell if I ever read the documents. That does not just disenfranchise me, and my understanding of memory is that the working group rules ended up saying, yes, that's correct. That is, we will never necessarily hold any poll that counts on a teleconference, and we cannot stop someone who is a member of record from participating, period.
Okay, on the list I have James, and then I have Avery, and then I think Marilyn wanted to speak, but I'm... So I'll go to James, and then Avery.
Hi, very quickly, and maybe this is something that I missed very early on in the beginning of this, but this group is not a PDP. And so I don't know if it, you know, on day one, the PPSC implicitly agreed to adopt the PDP operating rules, or if we just assumed that was the case, or, I mean, if we wanted to vote, I think we could. You know, if we agreed to, if there was consensus to vote, I know it sounds kind of... Or if we voted to have consensus, I mean, and we could probably mix and match those tools and come up with something. But and I want to make sure that the transcription and recording is going. I 100% agree with you, Alan, about the working group model. It was handed to us. It is to me, in my opinion, I think I've expressed it on this group. It is a very efficient engine at deferring decisions and moving. Action, you know, to other bodies and to other groups, and that's one of my issues with the working group model. And one of the questions, and I kind of wanted to save this to the very end of this process, but one of the questions is, by putting together this report, of all the really great things that we're recommending need to be fixed in the working group model, are we implying that we think that the working group model is the way to go and that it is an improvement over what came before it? You know, to my understanding, we're kind of in a beta test of this working group model, and are we saying we bought it?
Sorry, I have to go back on the mic. All right, let me, on that point, I saw a couple hands raised. So, Aubrey, I'll go, you're next on the list. Do you want to?
And I'll cover that among.
Okay, so let me go to, I got Aubrey, I got Marika, Marilyn, and Alan.
Okay, first, I think in the last bit of conversation, and thanks, we've conflated three issues. We've conflated the PPSC notion of having representatives who are voting on things. We've conflated the working group, working team model and report with the PDP working and group report. I've personally seen the working group model work superbly for over 20 years at producing real, near or rough, or what we define as ICANN consensus, most of the people with a few disagreeing voices. I think in terms of Alan's point of the people who participate passively in the doodle polls, first of all, I think polling is something that should also be banned, but that's a personal opinion, because I think polling is voting, however you want to pretend that it's not. It is voting. Is that the working group indications are very clear about, even if you come into a group at the end, which you should still be able to do, you have an obligation of having read everything, of not bringing up new issues that hadn't already been discussed. Now you can say, well, but you weren't there to discuss them. That's beside the point. It's the working group's responsibility to try and cover all the issues as they're proceeding. And if the issue somehow or other got missed, it is appropriate that it take a step back. But working groups do drive towards conclusions. I think we've even seen some. We've seen some task forces in the past that couldn't come to a conclusion on things. If there are, you know, constituencies, stakeholder groups that want to dig in their heels on something, the heels are dug in, and you're not going to get to a conclusion no matter what methodology you use. Working groups being imposed from on high, perhaps, but the GNSO started using working groups before the on high came down with them, because we found that the task force model wasn't working anymore. So we had already evolved into using working groups before anybody said we must do it. We were already doing it, and they were just basically blessing what it was we were doing. So to step back now and say, oh my God, this is on high, this was top down, when it's something we originated while they were talking about it, I think sort of confuses the history. I truly believe they work, but like every other method here, it takes the goodwill of the people to make them work. If we've got an oppositional notion of politics here that always says if A wants it, B doesn't, then no method will work other than swords and shields at dawn. And, you know, I don't think we want to go there. So, thanks.
Okay, and then after these next few people, then I do want to cut it off and get to the some of the outstanding issues. So I got Marika, then Marilyn, and then Alan.
Yeah, this is Marika. I've already made my point on the representativeness, because I think indeed it's a PPSC issue where people are indeed there representing their stakeholder group or constituencies and have voting rights based on that, and their participation is an issue. On the issue of whether working groups are the right model, I recall that the ALAC submitted a comment in relation to that, and I think it is covered in the draft report, I think in a way of saying, the PDP assumes that working groups are the model for now, but you know, it shouldn't be preclude if at any point in time a different model is chosen, that these rules could apply or would it be adopted as well. I don't know if we go so far in the report to say it might be good at some point to indeed review whether the working group model is working or whether other models should be explored or hybrids or different options should be posted, and we need to check back, but it might be something the work team might want to add to the report.
Okay, and then Marilyn?
Like Aubrey, I too have worked for a number of years in various policy and standards bodies. Of course, like Aubrey, I know ICANN hasn't existed for 20 years. We've been evolving our process. But decisions made here are not just technical standard decisions. And I think one of our challenges is that they represent a sort of a Venn diagram of bringing together policy challenges that affect not only contracted parties or potential contracted parties, business users, others, but also a vast number of other Internet users if they affect the use of unique indicators, as well as having economic implications and stability implications for the organization. I am a big believer in inclusiveness on gathering information and in debating, but I do think that it's going to be important for us to assess if people are, if a group is composed without some kind of balance of representation, without a vote, I'm not sure that people will feel obligated to show up and participate. And I'm just raising it as a, and take accountability for their input. So I'm just raising it as a question that I think we've got to come back and think about more. Because I agree with Alan, I personally do not consider, yes, it was handed to us, but I wouldn't use the term from on high.
Okay, Alan.
Okay, a couple of points. First, with respect to James's issue of what rules are we working on, I believe we did agree to use the interim working group rules as they were at the start of this group, and that may even have implied that as the working group rules change, we would change with them. I'm not sure about that. But we, in our charter, we did make reference, I believe, to a set of rules. So we are basically a functioning working group, like it or not. I don't know whether we have a charter or not. Maybe we have one. In terms of the handed down from on high, I wasn't saying that the Board Governance Committee came up with a concept. I was saying that they very explicitly said we shall use working groups as currently conceived of within ICANN, as opposed to it is one of the tools in our tool bag, which was the previous situation. As was noted, the GNSO did evolve the current work group model because the task force was not viewed as being the perfect model. I very strongly believe we need to have that flexibility to evolve to a third model sometime in the future if we can conceive it. And I would not want to see working groups as currently conceived tied into the model, because we may decide that there are not better ways, that there are better ways of doing it, maybe. And lastly, as I implied before, there were a few people, some of them on that list, who very vociferously said that I shall not be disenfranchised just because I never participate in any way that you can observe me doing. And my recollection is the working group work team said, yeah. So, again, it's one of those things handed down not from on high but laterally. Via a detour of on high, that we're sort of stuck with at the moment until we can get a consensus, however we get that consensus, that we need to change it.
Okay, thanks, Alan. So why don't we, just looking around, any more comments on that, why don't we go then to, if we could post the latest version of the issues that we're here to discuss. By the way, on the Adobe list, the attendee list, there's someone by the code name IDNGTLD Fast Track. Do we know who that is? Okay, if we could just go to where we left off. showing up on the screen up there. Oh, there we go. Okay, so it's we're on the okay, so we're on number four. That's page six of this outstanding issues document, and so we do want to get some good notes on this so we can finalize this area in the report. This is talking about the agreement of council. It's recommendation 41, and we've discussed whether the voting thresholds might need to be reviewed, but we haven't arrived yet at a possible recommendation in relation to this issue. And we said that we wanted to get further input and from the public comment period. The public comment period basically didn't really – there weren't too many public comments that addressed this. I don't know if it was because it was opening up a really thorny area that was the subject of a lot of compromise early on that gave way to the new council structure, or it was that people were completely satisfied with all of the voting thresholds. So – just to kind of review, and I don't know, at one point we had a chart of the different thresholds, and it's probably in the report. But the only voting threshold that we really added from the ones that we were kind of handed with the new structure was on the raising the issue. And Marika's looking at me, so I'm thinking maybe I'm incorrect. What's that? I'm sorry, on the charter. So was it both of them that we added, or? Right. I'm sorry, charter, approving the charter. Yes, thank you, Marika. It's early. So we added that in, and basically the outcome of that was essentially it's going to be the same threshold as the threshold for approving the PDP in the first place. So it's not really it's adding a threshold in the sense of you're adding another vote, but you're not adding a different threshold. And so let me throw it out to the group. We need to come to a final decision on this. Do we want to touch any of the existing ones? Do we want to make a recommendation that, for example, things that you've heard in the hallways, is the threshold too low for raising an issue? Is it too low for or high for initiating a PDP? Or is this something that the group feels like, let's just leave well enough alone in this version and have it reviewed after a certain period of time? So, Alan?
This has been going on for a long time, and my memory is fading on some of the early discussions. Maybe Jeff or Marika can remind me. I remember with regard to one of the voting thresholds, and I cannot remember which, we came to a conclusion pretty early in the process that there should be another variation of it. In other words, you know, I don't remember what it was. It was the majority of one stakeholder group and a tenth of the other, and we said, or some other combination. I can't remember which threshold it is and what the numbers were, but we had a pretty extensive discussion on it and said we would defer it, but it looks like we probably should change it.
Where could you call?
Did I imagine this all as possible?
In the report.
I just need to check. I'm okay. Pulling up the old report and seeing, because I do recall that we did, but I don't know if it was in relation to that. I think it was another voting threshold where we just said, like, I think it was related to supermajority, that it might mean this, and it could also...
Yeah.
I think it was more that... I think in discussions on the voting threshold, especially, cause I think we discussed the initiation or raising an issue, I think there we had indeed some view saying, well, it's really low, and some saying, well, it needs to be low, because otherwise nothing gets raised.
No, I don't think it was this one. I think it was another one. It may well have been a supermajority definition. I'm just trying to make sure it wasn't this one, but
I think it was in the supermajority definition. I think, and we had agreed to that. It wasn't a new threshold or anything, and that's in the report. Marika, you found it?
I didn't find it, but I did wanted to make a comment indeed, especially on raising the issue, because I think that's where most of the concern is, that you know issues are just raised left and right, and you know force staff, but as well the council, to work on issues. I know that we discussed as well the birds of a feather idea, or should there be, you know, if you raise an issue, you need to come with a bunch of volunteers that are going to do the work. But I'm wondering as well on raising the issue, because as if the voting threshold is so low now, if there should be kind of requirement that, you know, maybe it should at least be supported by two constituencies, or something that at least is shown some kind of support. I don't know. I'm thinking of some ideas that there might be something where you say, like, look, it's not just one person that comes with an idea and, you know, his or her constituency just votes along because they always support each other, and there's, you know, zero support from anyone else in the council, or I don't know if that's a construct what could be explored, that there at least needs to be a kind of level of support that warrants as well that there are volunteers to actually work on the issues and participate and get stuff done. But that's a suggestion.
Right, so let me just remind everyone about the threshold for raising the issue. Counts for, there's everyone recall there's three ways of raising an issue, right? It's not just from within the council. So if the board may initiate a PDP, you know, they don't have to, it's not that the council then at that point, it's pretty much, it happens if the board raises it. If it's an advisory committee, then it's the advisory committee that raises the issue, and then, you know, the GNSO council has to still vote to initiate the PDP, but the issue's raised if the advisory committee wants it raised. We're talking about now specifically with the council, and this is, you know, the council on its own initiative, it's at least 25% of the members of the council of each house or a majority of one house. So in theory, what you could have is you could have so if it was 25%, you could have one stakeholder group on each side and not a majority of 25% of the members of each house. Yeah, so you could easily, you already would have two, I think. I don't think it would be a possibility to have one. I think they kind of figured that into the threshold when they were initially discussing it, but yeah, it could be. It could be different members of different groups without one stakeholder group or one constituency as a whole agreeing to it, yes. So, you know, this has been a subject that's discussed regularly around the table. Is it too easy to raise an issue? And then are we left with all these issues being raised and no resources, time, and then we have to put into the prioritization exercise? Again, we have to put this issue to a close. Which could be, we're just, you know, we could easily say, look, we're working with the thresholds we were given out of the restructuring. We've added one with respect to a charter because that seemed like a hole that wasn't ever filled. But, you know, nothing in the report has to say that these are definitely the right ones and that they shouldn't be revisited, but we just made assumptions here and are moving on. So we have options, but we need to close it. We need to close the options as to what we want to do. So let me go to Alan.
This is a refrain you've heard from me before. I still think we are overreacting to the amount of administrative work we took on with the restructuring. And I think council is overreacting to the number of PDPs that get initiated. I suspect the number of issues reports that staff creates is maybe two a year over the last number of years. I don't think it's much more than that.
So I
don't think the volume is that high, and this low threshold does not generate a lot of PDPs. So let's react to real problems, not a long list of things. I mean, even if we counted all the administrative things we're doing, you know, if council calculates the number of man hours that this group generates a month, it's not very many because not all that many people work on it. So the load, other than the load on our staff person or people, which is moderately high, I think we're overreacting, and I don't think we need to change it based on that overreaction at this point.
So I think one of the things that the council is going to discuss, hopefully at the wrap-up session, I think there's a lot coming down the pike that could easily come up. You know, there are some reports like the registration abuse report that's got a whole bunch of recommendations, kind of like a transfers, where there could, in theory, be a bunch of work coming down the pike on as far as PDPs or best practices. But so I hear what you're saying, Alan, and so I'm sure there's differing viewpoints. Let me do a quick one. I'll go with James and Marika. Okay.
James. Yeah, just very quickly, and RAP is a good example. We shouldn't assume one issues report translates into one PDP. The ratio is sometimes much higher.
Okay. But we tend to serialize them.
So let's, well, all right.
And that can be worse.
Okay, let me go to Marika, and then again, I want everyone to think, the ultimate question here is, what do we want to do as a group? Do we want, again, the options are, we could revisit this and discuss all of these. We could basically say, look, we can note some of the things that we've talked about, but really state that we did not get into discussing whether the existing thresholds are right. We just kind of worked with those assumptions. I see those as primarily the two options at this point. Let me go to Marika, and then I want to get a sense of where everyone is.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think another one to consider is the initiation of a PDP, because indeed, maybe on raising an issue, it's like, well, that should be a very low threshold, because you know, it should be possible to explore the issue, you know, get it in front of the council. But of course, the voting threshold for the initiation of a PDP is also very low. And we've seen in the past where there are several instances where basically there was very little interest in the council to move it forward, where staff said as well, like, you know, this is not a good issue for a PDP, further work needs to be done, but it would get voted on anyway and move ahead. Working groups then struggling with actually trying to figure out what they're supposed to do because the issue is so broad. I'm talking here about fast flux for those that didn't read between the lines. Very few volunteers actually willing to do the work, ending up with, you know, 3-4 diehard members of the working group finishing off the report, landed on the shelf of the council with all the recommendations that are still not implemented, ignored, nothing being done with. And, you know, personally, I find that, you know, really bad as well for the volunteers that invested the time to do that work. You know, the council wanted to go ahead. They, because of the low threshold, it moved forward. But then at the end of the day, with a work product, no one's interested and no one wants to do anything with it. So I think, you know, I don't know how that can be built in into the consideration of the initiation of a PDP, but I do believe it's a concern and something the group, you know, should think about.
So just as a little point of clarification, I think when the council was restructured, the threshold went a little bit higher in the sense of from where we were with fast flux, because right now it's 33% of both houses or 66% of one house, which is much higher, I think, than the 33% of the overall council, which is what it used to be when fast flux. So that may be a difference, and it may be a reason why, you know, one of the things, now I'll put on my personal viewpoint here, is that at this point I think we might want to allow a little bit more time for the council, for PDPs to come up before we touch that threshold, kind of as a review period. Let's not, as a group at this point, change some of those thresholds, because we really haven't seen it that much in action since the council was just restructured, and I'm not sure how many PDPs have been initiated since the new structure. But I have to believe it. What's that? VI was, I think, one of the only ones, right, that really came about. So it may be a little premature for this group to make recommendations that differ from what we just put in place a year ago. But again, that's a total personal viewpoint, not even a registry or certainly not a chair viewpoint. That's my own personal viewpoint. But I actually do want to kind of go, I mean, Alan, you had your hand raised. Sorry, I don't want to miss that.
Just very quick. We were put in place to decide on the new procedure. I think an issue of the voting level for this kind of thing is very much a council decision. And the balance within council, I think, counts at that point. So I would like to think council would do it based on information of the type you're talking about, based on real history. You know, for instance, we debate continually on what the threshold should be. My recollection is most PDPs that have gotten initiated when I've been around have been initiated with a much larger threshold anyway. You know, there are not many that have squeaked through with barely the right number. Maybe Fast Flux is one of them. I don't remember. But I think very much it's a council decision, and it's going to require the balanced debate and preferably with information. And so I think we should not be spending a lot of time on it.
So with that said, and Avrika, yeah, okay.
Only if you're still asking, you know, if Alan's right and we're not even going to talk about it here, then I don't have a view.
Well, actually, my question is, let me throw out the option.
Right.
The option is we as a group basically state that we're adding the one threshold because we found it was a gaping hole, and it certainly came about when the vertical integration, the one thing we're adding was the voting of a charter, and that as far as with respect to all of the other thresholds, we as a group just didn't really address changing those. Well, we addressed it, I guess, but we're not opining on whether to change those. We just kind of took those as ones we're working with, and we're not saying one way or another as a work team as to whether they should be changed or not be changed. It's just something we kind of were working with. So that's that's a recommendation I'll have to throw out so that we don't discuss whether these are the right thresholds or not.
So I won't discuss whether they're the right ones.
Do you agree with that approach? Let me ask
sure.
that. Okay.
Sure. I mean, I've always had, on the one we have in terms of the charter, I've always been sort of bothered by the charter and the approval of the PDP not being a single atomic step. I think approving a PDP without knowing what the charter of the working group that's going to work on it is kind of very incomplete. So the fact that those two aren't bound continues to trouble me. That if they are not bound and they are separated, that you need a threshold for it. It seems obvious, and you know, but the fact that they're not bound has always struck me as problematic.
Yeah, and I think I know the report does reflect the that we do talk about. There's certainly the option of presenting those together, but we didn't want to cut off we didn't want to make it inflexible. And so we do provide that option to provide them separately, and then in that case you would have the same threshold.
Yeah, and that's one where I think it should be inflexible. I think if we don't know what we want to do, then why are we voting for a PDP? If we don't know what the goals are, what the, you know, if just... So I don't see how they could be separate, but...
I think it's a legitimate question for council as well. I mean, council may not want to deal with an issue until there's a charter presented, but... yes, Margie?
Yeah, the only instance that I recall was the vertical integration where the PDP was approved and took several meetings to get the charter finally approved. And even that required several steps. So that's one example of where it was split up. I don't know that that's an ideal situation, but it certainly did come up. Yeah.
And the way VI went, that's probably a good clue to part of the problem with splitting them up is all of a sudden you are committed to a PDP, and so you must come up with a charter. Otherwise, you've already failed, and so you keep... And as opposed to, you know, knowing up front what it is and approving the whole thing. So I think that as an example, you know.
Oh, sorry. Let me, Marika, and then let's kind of try to wrap it up.
Yeah, this is Marika. I mean, if we would go down that road of linking the two together, we would need to look at the timing issue as well, because I think now we've built in some kind of timing that, you know, can be a kind of deferral after delivery of the issues report on the actual vote on initiation. But indeed, normally for development of a charter, a drafting team is formed, so then there's a call for volunteers, they need to meet. Some instances it goes very fast, but in certain cases it might take some time. So if there would be linkage, it would need to be factored in into the timing on the vote of the initiation. So even if we are making that an option, we need to make sure then that in the timing on the vote or the initiation vote that there's this margin for if the council indeed decides that it wants to vote at the same time on the charter and on the initiation of the PDP, that sufficient time is built in to allow for the development of that charter.
Okay, do you want to put that in the notes section? Okay. Any other comment on that? So anyone disagree with the approach that I had mentioned of, you know, we're adding the one threshold and on the others we're basically saying we're working with what we were given and we're not saying one way or another whether those thresholds are the right or wrong ones? Okay, seeing no disagreement on that, if we move on to the next one, which is talking about, this is number 5, right? This is what it means to act. And just as a reminder, so obviously the board is given direction. If the GNSO approves a policy by a supermajority, then there's thresholds for the you know, it says the board must adopt unless, you know, there's thresholds for the board. But it also says that it only needs, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have to paraphrase. It's in there. 13F says in the bylaws that in any case in which the council is not able to reach GNSO supermajority vote, a majority vote of the board will be sufficient to act. And there's always been kind of a, you know, what does that mean? And we've discussed this many times as a group. And we have not proposed at this point any language to clarify that. At least in the initial report, we didn't. But now there's if you look at the notes section, it's kind of hard to read up there. It's kind of small. But we added in the draft final report language that says, if the GNSO Council is recommending a consensus policy, which is a capital C, capital P, as defined within the ICANN contracts, the board could only approve a consensus policy that was approved by the required GNSO voting threshold. And that's something we discussed as a group. Alan?
The form of that discussion took, or part of the form of that discussion was you, perhaps among others, saying that we don't know what the formal interpretation of these words is, but if ICANN interprets it as such and such, we would disagree, we as a registry. It would be useful if we if we can hear from ICANN legal counsel onto what their definition is. It may be the same, and we can then just clarify the words. If it's different, we need to thrash out this and not just set ourselves up for court battles. It would be really nice to get
I think that's great, and opinion. I think Margie's volunteering.
Actually, I did check internally, and they just have no experience with this section, and we're not, you know, we're going to try to come up with an interpretation of it, but they've never been faced with this particular issue, so that was the best I could get from them.
Great non-answer. But I'm assuming, I shouldn't assume. Can we check to make sure that there's no disagreement if we write this in, that they're just not going to go to... Here's my fear, is that we'll write it in there, they'll go to the board with it, they'll, in private, in board papers, and in redacted legal advice to the board, because this would be legitimately something that would be redacted, right, is legal advice to the board, and then just rejected. I mean, this is part of the openness and transparency and working together that we really need to do. And I think my reaction as chair of this group, and looking at Alan's face and some others around here, that's just not an acceptable answer for us. And we need something better. And we need them to get some stake in this and to say, yes, this is the way we would interpret it, or no. Or we need some dialogue. We can't be in a vacuum here.
Yeah, it's Margie. I completely understand the concern, and too bad Sam's not here anymore. At least get her thoughts on it. This is one of those things they would have to go back and consider, and I can ask them for specific input on this language. I didn't ask this language. I just asked what's their interpretation of the existing language. So I don't know where they would fall on this particular issue.
I think this is a pretty big one. Let me go to Alan.
If there is no experience and no one is around who wrote the words, maybe we don't need a legal opinion, a legal counsel opinion of what it means. Maybe the board has to discuss what they think it means and how they would interpret it and how they want to interpret it. Essentially, this is asking is, if the GNSO does not have a supermajority, does the board feel that with some voting threshold, they have the right to make it a consensus policy, capital C, capital P? If the answer is yes, then there needs to be some dialogue and maybe some lawsuits, but, you know, that remains to be seen. But I don't think it's just if it's not something which legal counsel can interpret at this point, then it needs to be a board discussion. And one way or another, we should end up, by the time we finish this whole process, with clarity. I understand why bylaws and legislation sometimes is vague, but this shouldn't be one of them.
So let me make a request, actually, even without the legal counsel, because legal counsel may not want to offer an opinion, but possibly recommending a meeting with the Board Governance Committee directly with this working group to talk about this particular issue. Because the Board Governance Committee is the one that would discuss these types of issues and is certainly the ones that referred all of this to us. And I got to tell you, if they refuse, that is a huge accountability and transparency problem that will need to be addressed way beyond this work team. Because this is a crucial issue for contracted parties and others, and if the board's got a different view, I would almost say that's not really relevant to the contracted parties, because at that point, you know, a unilateral interpretation of a contract provision is basically meaningless to the other party, unless you go to court and fight it out, or arbitration. James, you know.
Thanks, Jeff. James speaking. And you know, maybe I've lost the handle on this, and its importance is not rubbing off on me the way it should. But you know, in those cases, first of all, I mean, if we haven't encountered it yet, great. This is the opportunity to fix it. you know, if we've spotted some sort of a vulnerability or a defect that needs to be corrected. But you know, if it says something to the effect of, if I'm understanding your synopsis earlier, Alan, that you know, that in this case, act would be action in the absence of a supermajority vote of honest consensus policy. Well, doesn't the board have some existing temporary mechanisms that it can use? And why wouldn't it just essentially fall into that bucket? You know, if they continued to proceed in the absence and. And then finally, you know, are the bylaws the only place where a consensus policy is defined? I mean, there are contracts that we have that define what a consensus policy is and what it takes to create one. And if it doesn't align with what's in the bylaws, you know, I think that there may be some gaps there, too.
Some of them are circular that just say it is as defined in the bylaws, right?
And then the bylaws say...
this, which
yeah.
is, right? So, and I do see this, you know, it hasn't happened before, but I with the higher thresholds and the voting in the GNSO, I could easily see a situation where, let's say, there was out of registration abuse, where you have just a majority of council that may vote in favor of something, but you can't get a supermajority. And then the board says, "Well, I want to approve it anyway." And now the board could take the view that since it's acting, it's forced on all the contracted parties without ever having that supermajority. It hasn't happened before, and I think we can knock on wood for that. But it is something that I could easily, and other people are shaking their head, I could easily see this happening.
Well, so I guess my question is, what are our options going forward for this? Can we say that this is what we think it means as this group?
We could pretty much say
whatever
we want.
Can we fix this problem? I mean, we found a problem. Can we fix it?
We can certainly recommend a fix to it, certainly, and the council could then approve that in the final report. What the board chooses to do with that is completely outside of our control. And I think what we'd want to know going in is because I think we should have a dialogue with them. It would be good to understand what exactly their interpretation of this provision is.
Okay, and I'm sorry, Margie. I have one more question because I've just, like I said, I may have lost the handle on this one. So we've assumed that this is, you know, an issue or recommendation. You know, we think we should have ice cream on the last day of ICANN meetings. It doesn't get supermajority on GNSO, but the board decides to get us ice cream anyway. You know, and that it's a positive, adoption of a policy. But I'm trying to invert this a little bit. I mean, is it possible that they could, by the same recipe, ignore a recommendation based on I got to work on that one a little bit, but do you see where I'm going with this? Is that if there's a gap here between what's coming out of what's crossing a certain threshold in the GNSO versus what the board is doing, then I think that there's a fear that that could be also turned around, that that they would substitute something in its place. Instead of ice cream, we get pumpkin pie or something, you know.
I mean, and I'll go over to Marge. The definition of what it means to act is very broad.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues here. My first point was that if you want to deal with the board governance committee, remember the issue we had about sending a letter to the board? What was some issue in the past? We want to make sure we go through the GNSO council. Remember there was some procedural, I can't even remember what it was, but it was some outrage that we had sent some question to the board. Was that what it was? Huh? It was, no.
That was here.
It was something. Anyways, so we want to just keep the procedural thing, you know, if we're going to do this, go the right way, go to the GNSO council. The GNSO council talks to the board, and they have this dialogue. I think this is an important dialogue. I think James's observation is probably similar to my observation, that what's in the bylaws isn't going to trump what's in the contract. The contracts are what they are, and then you have the bylaws. So there, you know, there's certainly that, you know, there's always that question as to what you know, how you read those two together, and if there's a gap. I think it's up to us to suggest a change so that it gets fixed. I mean, I'm not saying that we should keep the, if there's legitimately a gap and there could be an interpretation I think that's something that needs to be, you know, clarified. The thing I want to caution, though, is remember the board has, you know, a fiduciary duty to act on behalf of the corporation. The GNSO Council does not. And so you can't do things, or at least I would encourage not doing things that tie the board's hands, because the board has to be able to exercise its discretion, you know, and its business judgment rule or whatever it is, you know, in California. But that's something that we always have to keep in mind. And even in today's bylaws, in Annex A, there is no obligation that the board has to adopt a GNSO recommendation. They always have the discretion to take it or not take it. If they don't take it, I think there's steps on informing the GNSO Council why they didn't take it. I mean, I think that there's some language in the bylaws that address that, but, you know, I just want to clarify that I don't think you'll ever get to a point where you're going to require the board to adopt a GNSO Council recommendation.
Right, but this is so narrow in the sense that this has nothing to do with the fiduciary duty, right? It's not saying the board can't act. It's just saying that the board can't impose it on a third party, which has nothing to do with a fiduciary duty to itself. So I hear what you're saying, but I think as constructed, this is very narrow.
I would disagree with that, because ICANN is contracts. I mean, that's the only way that we do what we do with, you know, in this industry is through contracts. So if it involves a fiduciary duty issue, I don't think you could tie their hands. But I'm not sure.
But this is not. I don't want to get into this debate now, and again, this is not as chair, sorry. This is imposing some obligation on a third party as opposed to on itself and as far as its own duties. So it's a capital C, capital P. It's not saying the board can't pass something, and it's not saying the board can't take action on its own right. What it's saying is the board can't impose something on a third party that it otherwise wouldn't, because it's governed by a contract, not by corporate or fiduciary duties. So in other words, a corporation could always interpret on its own a provision of a contract, but that doesn't necessarily make it binding on a third party. Totally different. But I understand what you're saying, and we've got to have this dialogue.
Right.
So I would.
I agree. There needs to be dialogue.
So
and
I would recommend, Marika, if we could just to get around the procedure, not get around to comply. Let's put this in the slide presentation for Wednesday when we go over this with the council. Maybe not slides, or make sure I have it in my update. Make sure I mention it. Remind me later, please. Remind me later to raise this during the update, that there's an issue, there may be an issue or two that we want to discuss directly with the Board Governance Committee, and to make sure that the council's aware of that. So I think that's where we are on this particular issue. Alan, you want to do a closing remark on this, and then we'll close up the meeting.
I just wanted to clarify something. The board currently, under the bylaws, does have the ability to unilaterally squash a consensus policy recommendation approved by a supermajority of the GNSO. It just takes a supermajority of the board to squash it. There's no debate about that. So the board is not bound by any GNSO requirement. That's already there. The registry's contracts simply refer to consensus policy as defined in the bylaw. Now, your lawyers may not have interpreted it the same way as someone else's lawyers. That might end up coming to court, but it's ICANN's right to define consensus policy in its bylaws and presumably even change those bylaws. Your contract doesn't say, and the bylaws must never change from the day we signed the contract. So I think the right is the issue is there, but we want to make sure how it is being interpreted or how it would be interpreted. And I'll note this is a registry issue today only, because the registrars are bound by this convoluted arcane definition of the RAA of consensus policy in the RAA, which may change with this coming revision. There has been some discussion that maybe we should get it in line and make it clear, as opposed to the unimplementable version we have right now. But currently, it's just a registry issue, not a registrar issue, for better or worse.
I think that's correct. There are different definitions in the registry and registrar, and some have discussed bringing it in line. Okay, with that, I do want to just as far as the timeline, I think what are we doing as far? I'm looking over at Marika as far as. Remaining calls for this year, if we're going to do any?
Yeah,
or
we actually haven't discussed. There's, of course, option to have a call next week, and the week after, but then we're getting very close to Christmas. I think it's the 23rd. Some do. And then, of course, the question is in the first week of January, as I'm assuming that people are taking time off between Christmas and New Year's. So the question is, are people available next week or the week after? Should we do a doodle poll and just get people to take if they can make the calls next week, the week after, and the first week of January to get a sense if people are available?
I vote for giving us a holiday next week.
What's that? I vote for.
He said, "I vote for giving us a holiday next week."
I'm just looking. Well,
I just know that this is like very important stuff, and my wife and my young children would really want me to focus on this during the upcoming Christmas season.
Yeah, I think so. So let's do a doodle poll to see who can make it the 23rd.
Yeah,
we'll give people a week
doodle
off, and then also for my own reasons, so it would be the 23rd. The one after that would be the 30th, which is probably going to be rough for some people, I would assume, especially if you're in Europe, because they like to take some weeks off there. What's that? And ICANN's closed, so yeah, apparently ICANN has a forced week of vacation. And then the one after that would be the 6th, which is the same as the council call, so that might be a rough day too. Different time, but I don't know. So we'll look into that and see what times those are at. Alan, yes?
I suggest we reconvene in April.
See everyone in San Francisco. No. Okay, guys, thank you for showing up. We'll do a doodle poll as far as next meetings, and appreciate the hard work, and we'll just keep going.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Operator, you can stop the recording, please. Thank you.